Hello and welcome to the Tao of June, living an inspired life. Today I'm going to talk about something that is polarizing. I know that this is going to upset many people, but I hope that I can articulate my intentions in a way that will help people understand, you know, maybe not agree, of course, because if you don't agree with hunting, you know, there's nothing. I'm not trying to change your opinion. This is just simply an attempt to explain why I have decided to take up hunting at 40 years old for the first time in my life. And I hope to do it in a way that is respectful, but also in a way where people, well, it'll help people understand how I've come to this decision without feeling like I'm trying to convince or persuade anyone, but also, you know, just to help be clear about why I want to do it. No, so I just got done with a hunter safety course, which is required to get a hunter safety license. I mean, a hunting license here in Georgia. You have to take this course, which is a two-day course, a two-night course, or you can take a all-day course like I did today. All day, 9 hours. Or you can take it online, but with something like this, I really wanted to take it in person, in class, and so that I can ask the instructor questions if they come up, because I don't even know what questions might come up, because I don't even know what I don't know. And I really enjoyed the class today. It was very informative, very enlightening, insightful. The thing is, hunters are conservationists. I didn't know that, but that's why even the public lands where we're allowed to hunt on public land, it's called WMAs, Wildlife Management Associate, you know, areas, wildlife management areas where you can hunt. But you can't just hunt willy-nilly. You can't just hunt whatever you want. There's so many rules and regulations that you have to follow, and they change it every year, and they publish it every year, every season, and it's the hunter's responsibility to read up on them and learn all of the rules and regulations, and because the hunters are responsible conservationists working with Mother Nature to try to keep the population under control so that all species can live in a balanced ecosystem. That's what hunting, the goal of hunting. The thing is, I had this image of hunting when I was hunters when I was a kid. If I heard somebody was a hunter, I would think to myself, "Oh, that person must be ruthless, right? That person must be a killer. They enjoy killing things. They probably just go out and just kill whatever they want." That I learned today is a poacher. And poachers are criminals. Criminals that steal natural resources, living creatures from public lands, even private lands, but they're stealing from the state of Georgia or whatever state they're in. And it's illegal. And they're criminals. And they're the type of people who just enjoy killing things. They're, you know, they have no respect for the law and things like that. Hunters are the opposite. Hunters are conservationists. They're responsible. They're ethical. We learned a lot. There's a whole chapter on hunter ethics. And I learned that Aldo Leopold, who is the father of wildlife management, he said that hunter ethics is doing the right thing even when no one is watching. And I've heard that before. But he goes on to say, it's even when the wrong thing is legal. I thought that was really powerful. Doing the right thing. I wouldn't even say hunter ethics. I would just say ethics, right? Being ethical is doing the right thing when no one is watching. Even when the wrong thing is legal. You know, you choose not to do it anyways because you know the right thing to do is not to do that. You know, I thought that was really powerful. And here's the thing. The question I get a lot is, June, if you love dogs so much, if you love animals so much, because I do, I love going to the aquarium. I love watching documentaries and learning about animals and their behavior. I love learning about plants even. The thing is, you know, the question is, if you love animals so much, why would you want to kill one? And it's not, I don't want to kill animals. It's not that I want to go out because I enjoy, I'm so eager to take an animal's life. No, the thing is, I tried to go vegetarian because I didn't want to eat meat because of how animals are treated and killed in these mass market, you know, these mass produced meat factories. And I just, I felt so bad. But then I couldn't sustain my energy levels because I have such a physical job. And I stay pretty active. Archery, I walk my dogs morning and night. And I stay active. And I couldn't keep up. I felt drained. I felt fatigued. And I just realized at 40 years old now, I can't play around with my nutrition. I can't just, you know, be careless with it anymore, with my health. So I couldn't sustain the vegetarian diet. And I know people are like, oh, you didn't do it right. You could eat, you know, things, you know, soy. And I do. I eat tofu. Koreans are all about that tofu. And soybeans and all that. It's just, I even try, you know, we did the veggie meat. But I have to admit as well, I just enjoy cooking meat. And fish as well. I love fish. I love eggs. I love cheese. I love dairy. Oh, man. So then I was thinking, when I get my own place, I could actually, you know, buy some chickens, baby chickens, and I'll raise my own chickens and have them lay eggs. And then when they get older and it's time, you know, they can't lay eggs anymore and they're older, you know, then I can take one of the chickens from my own that I raised. And here's the thing. Because I will have gotten attached to that chicken, because I've gotten attached to chickens before when I worked at a place called Pet Club out in Arizona. I was a groomer there, and it was a feed store, and they had these baby chickens that would come in, and I remember I would like go try to pet them whenever there was a new batch that would come in. These tiny little baby chickens are so cute and adorable, and they would all scatter and run away. But every day I would stop by and say hi and say goodbye and talk to them during the day when it was slow. And after a while, they would get to know me, and some of the chickens, they wouldn't run away. They wouldn't let me pet them. Oh my God, it was so cute. They would close their little eyes, let me pet them. And I was like, oh my God, it looks like they enjoy it. I was like, it looks like they actually enjoy the affection. I was like, this is amazing. This is so crazy, you know? And I learned a lot about, I learned that birds, chickens can actually show emotion and enjoy affection. I never would have imagined. So then, you know, I know that if I raise them, because whenever they would leave and a new batch would come in, I would miss them, you know, and it would always be fun getting to know the new chickens, but I would always miss the batch that left. And I know that if I raised a chicken from, you know, a chick, and when it was a baby, and it laid eggs for me its whole life, and then at the end of its life, when it comes to, you know, becomes, gets old, you know, and I take its life and I cook it, I think having that deep level of awareness, you know, being so consciously aware that I'm eating this chicken that I didn't just buy from the store and cook, make a chicken, you know, chicken noodle soup with, because I love doing that too, you know, boiling a whole chicken, making chicken noodle soup with it. And like, but boiling a chicken that I raised, that I got to know, I know its name, I've grown attached to it, and cooking this chicken for my family, you know, for people I love, so that we can sustain ourselves, and we can continue living, knowing that this life had to be sacrificed in order for me to continue living, you know, I think that creates a real sense of responsibility. You can't just take your life, you know, you have to take it seriously, right? Because if I go out there and I stalk a deer, a buck, and I learn its habits, I learn its routines, and, you know, I finally, maybe even after years, you know, of just trying over and over again, I finally take, you know, a shot, a clean shot, and I harvest this buck, this beautiful deer. You know, I feel like it's hard to take your life and just be careless with it after that. You know, knowing that this animal, this beautiful animal, this majestic creature that of God, you know, one of God's creatures, knowing that I took its life so that I can continue living, how can I be irresponsible with my life? How can I just live it carelessly after that? I think it adds a real, like, level of responsibility. You know, it raises that level of responsibility for your life. It's hard to get that same sense, that same feeling when you eat a Big Mac. You know, you conquer that Big Mac. You know what I'm saying? You gain that hard-won victory over a Big Mac. Outsmarted that freaking Big Mac, and you added some cheese to it. You know what I'm saying? You got a Big Mac with cheese now. Maybe you slipped in some bacon. Whatever. You got it supersized. It doesn't, like, you know, it doesn't hit the same way. You don't feel like, oh my goodness, this Big Mac or this Whopper had to sacrifice its life for me to continue living. I better not waste my existence, you know? I better not be careless with my time here. You know, like, this slice of pizza had to continue existing for me to exist. You know, I feel this deep level of responsibility for my life. No, of course it's easy to be a couch potato and lay around and be lazy and irresponsible with your time here on Earth. You know, of course it's easier to just eat chips, potato chips, and, you know, like, all this processed food. You're so detached from what it actually takes for life to continue, this cycle of life. You know, the lion eats the prey, the lion gets old, goes in the dirt, becomes part of the earth, which grows the grass, the prey animal eats the grass, the lion then eats the prey animal, and the circle of life goes on and on. It's, you know, and I feel like by being a part of that, by taking a part of that, you know, you become a more responsible human being, and you realize how you're contributing to this earth in a real way, in a direct way, that my existence is having a direct effect on this planet, at least here in Georgia, in the wild, you know, public lands. You know, when I take a turkey, and I'm going to do it all with my bow. I'm going to do all with just, you know, bow hunting. And maybe if I do carry a firearm, it's going to be a muzzleloader. We learned about muzzleloaders today. And muzzleloaders are considered primitive weapons. The thing is, I don't know if a muzzleloader that is like one of the modern day muzzleloaders that look like a, you know, just a regular shotgun. You wouldn't, like, just by looking at it, you know, the untrained eye would just mistake it for a regular rifle or shotgun. Some of these modern-day muzzle loaders. And they don't look like the muzzle loaders from, you know, like the Revolutionary War times, you know, the colonial, you know, war times. It's like, back then, those wooden, you know, long muzzle loader rifles. And the guns, even. The guns looked really cool, you know. But yeah, there's kits, even, that you can buy. So I think that's what I'm going to do, is buy a kit, a muzzleloader kit, like one of those, like, Kentucky style or like the Navy style muzzleloaders, you know, like back in like the 1500s, 1600s. I think I'm going to do one of the, you know, carry one of the, make one, buy a kit and actually make my own handgun and, you know, stuff a muzzleloader bullet down the muzzle, down the front end of it, you know, and then just carry that around you know, while I'm bow hunting, just in case, you know, a wild animal runs up on me and I don't have time to react with my bow. But here's the thing. I was thinking, do I even need a gun, though? Because, you know, I'm getting pretty accurate with my bow. You know, I could probably take most things coming at me. I hope a deer does rush me. You know what I'm saying? Or a wolf. I hope a wolf does come at me. You know, shoot, he'll meet the wrong end of my arrow, I'll tell you that. Right in between his eyes. You know, maybe not the first or second shot, but you know, if he's a fair distance away coming at me, and I got a few, you know, I got a few shots, you know, enough time to get a few shots off, I'm sure I could take that wolf down. But even if the wolf blindsided me, right? Let's say one wolf got me distracted and another wolf flanked me from the side and I wasn't prepared for that, right? Just caught me off guard. I got these arm bracers, these medieval arm bracers that are like a dragon scale design, and it's pretty thick. And when I put those around my forearms, I feel pretty badass, like pretty protected. You know, I feel pretty safe. So first of all, I'll raise my forearm where I have that medieval arm bracers. I really got it because I needed an arm guard for the string for my bow, because sometimes it slaps my hand, because sometimes I don't always have perfect form, because I sometimes, you know, just a lot going on in my mind during the shot process, aiming, holding the bow, holding 50 pounds back steady, or 35 pounds, because I practice with the 35-pound broke bow now. If I can talk, it's not bro, it's a bow, bro. Stop saying bro when you mean bow. Freak, man. Okay. So I can pull a 50-pound bow and shoot it several times in succession, several times in a row. But after a while, it makes my left arm that's holding the bow straight, it makes that arm, the elbow area, hurt. Like that tennis elbow, it's just too heavy. It's just too much. And that's why I practice with the 35-pound bow. It's much easier to hold. And I can actually practice with it for hours, all day long. And my arms will, my back will feel a little sore after shooting for hours. Oh man, sometimes I go in the afternoon and I will shoot until the sun goes down. And I shot for like 6 hours one day, just walking the 3D trail and shooting all day long. Oh, I loved it. But the next day I did feel a little sore. But where was I going with this? Oh yeah, that's right, how I'm a deadly weapon and I don't need a gun. That's right. So, I think because I'm going to be carrying, I got a buck knife, and it's about, 8 inches, the blade, 7 or 8 inches. It's pretty big. And I got a pretty serious buck knife that I got as a gift for being in my friend's wedding as one of his groomsmen. And I also got a machete. Like a 2-foot-long machete, like 24-inch blade, and I also have an axe, a little axe. It's more like a hatchet, kind of. It's not really an axe. I mean, it is an axe, but it's a smaller, portable axe that I could put, you know, have on my belt, and it has like a little belt holder. Anyways, so I'm thinking if I have my buck knife and I got my machete. And I got my hatchet, my axe, because I'm going to put the axe on my back, you know, on the back of my belt. So it's like kind of right below the small of my back, right above my asshole, right, where I need it. And then I'm going to have my buck knife to my right, right on my right hip on my belt. And then I'm going to have my machete on the right side my left hip, and that way I can grab it with my right hand, kind of swing across with my right hand and pull it out and cut the wolf's jaw off. The wolf that's flanking me, remember? Try to keep up, guys. The wolf that distracted me is in the front. The wolf that flanked me is coming from the side. And that way, my right side. And that way, I'm going to grab my machete that's on my left hip. And with one fell swoop, with one swing upwards, like an uppercut, swing upwards, I'm going to pull it out of its sheath, its protective sheath, rip it out while I'm swinging up, knocking the blade right through the wolf, the offending wolf's jaw, you know, cutting it clean off. And then spin around, because there's obviously going to be another wolf coming from behind. You know, I'm not an idiot. You already got me by surprise with the wolf from the side that flanked me. You know, fool me once, right? Shame on me. No, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me, right? And there shall be no shaming on me this day, sir. And I shall turn around and, you know, with a spinning attack, right? Because I already did the uppercut swing. And then with using that same momentum, come right down, right? Swinging, spinning downward, slash, boom, to the dog that's trying to get me from behind, thinking that I wasn't expecting that. But now I'm on to their game, right? And now the tables have turned. So then I'm going to turn around, point my bloody machete, because at this point it's going to be covered in blood, right? As am I. Right, as am I, just drenched and dripping in wolf blood at this point. Turn and point that bloody machete right at the original wolf that tried to distract me, because that's the old one. You know, that's the mastermind, that's the OG running this crew. You think I don't know? You think I don't know who orchestrated this? You know, those two bloody wolves that just died, that just laid down their lives, you know, for this wolf over here. You know, they were just the pawns. I know that. So I'll point the machete. Make sure some of that blood flicks in his direction, too. Make sure, get that intimidation factor up. And I would just stare at him, you know, with that look. Like, you come at me, right? And I'll keep you busy, like Brian Callen says. I'll keep you busy. You know what I'm saying? You're going to have your hands full with me, you know? And then he's going to call off the rest, you know, of his goons, right? Because he's probably going to know, I don't want to lose anymore to this human weapon, right? And that's when I'm going to point my bow at him. Just when he thinks that it's all over, and it's, you know, and he's in the clear, he calls off his goons, he thinks they're about to make a clean retreat, that's when I pull back my 50-pounder, right? My 50-pounder, and I hold it steady just for a few seconds longer than I should. Right? Just to flex. Literally flex that back muscle. They call it back tension in the trad world. You know, if you don't follow that kind of talk, you know, if you're not up with that kind of inside lingo, the trad world is what we refer to as the traditional archery world, right? The traditional archery circle. So that's just the inside lingo that I use to be cool, right? So in the trad world, as we say, right? Where was I going with this? Oh, yeah. We call it back tension. When you pull the string back and you hold it, you're not holding it with your arm muscles, you know, that, like an idiot, like a noob, back when I was losing arrows, right? Back a couple years ago when I was spending more time looking for the arrows. So yeah, now I've learned about back tension, you know, so I literally like to flex, especially in front of wolves that are trying to eat me while I'm out trying to be a conservationist, right? Let's bring it all around full circle how to end this. So now I would like to be referred to, because some people, you know, some people only know me as the Taoist, you know, they only know me from this podcast. So, you know, and of course, on this podcast, I only speak wisdom and philosophy. So some people only know me as June the Wise Man, you know, June the Taoist, June the Philosopher. But in some circles, I'm also known as June the Groomer. I groom dogs for, you know, for a living. I live to groom and I groom to live. And that's what pays the bills. And you think I do a? You think this pays the bill? If I was counting on this to pay the bills, I'd be in a lot of trouble. This I do for fun. My YouTube channel, I do that for fun. It does generate some income now after 9 years of doing it. But if I was doing it because of the income, oh my God, I would have given up years ago. I mean, who does it for the money, right? Well, I mean, of course, if you have millions of subscribers. But, you know, what I'm saying, though, is I groom dogs for a living. And so I'm known as June the Groomer. I spit some knowledge. You know what I'm saying? I spit some knowledge on this podcast. On the daily. No, I'm just kidding. Not on the daily. whenever thoughts come up. You know, whenever I make a long drive. Whenever I have time, I guess. I like to just record some of my thoughts. Some random thoughts going on in my life at the time. And that's why I do the podcast. And I'm known as June the Taoist, right? The Tao of June. And the joke there is, in the original Tao, the Tao Te Ching, written centuries ago back in China, it says that the Tao, which means the way that can be named, right? The Tao that can be named, organized, labeled, you know, made into a religion, is not the real Tao. You know, so the way that can be named is not the real way. So that's why, by calling this podcast the Tao of June, the Way of June, it's by calling it the Tao of June, it's not the real Tao. And that's the joke there. And now it's not funny because I had to explain it. But anyways, but now that I'm going to be hunting, because I just passed my hunter safety certification course. Because here in Georgia, you are not allowed to hunt. You're not allowed to get your hunting license until you pass this course. And that's why I now believe that being a legal hunter is probably one of the most responsible things that you can do as a conservationist. You know, if you really care about the ecosystem, about the environment, the habitat, about wildlife, then become a hunter. Seriously, because then you're actually taking an active part in wildlife management. And that's why all the public lands that we hunt on is, you know, here in Georgia at least, is called WMAs, wildlife management areas. And it's funded by the hunting licenses that we buy and the hunting equipment and the you know, every gun, all the ammunition, archery equipment, bows, arrows, all of that there's an extra tax that goes into the price, and that extra 10% goes into funding wildlife management in the Department of Natural Resources, the DNR. So hunters are actually helping to fund these conservation and projects, you know, and land acquisition, you know, buying up public land and making sure we have, you know, these conservation efforts so that we can preserve these habitats and wildlife for the future. You know, we help to keep population down. The thing is, down in South Georgia, there are feral hogs that are an invasive species. They're not native to Georgia. Especially, you know, down in South Georgia where they're just wreaking havoc. And the thing is, because they're not a native, they're an invasive species, they have no known predators, no natural predators. So there's nothing regulating their population. And hogs are breeding out of control. And they're also eating up everything, all the natural resources. So the wildlife, the animals that live there naturally, that is their natural habitat, they're dying of starvation because the hogs are eating everything in sight and they're breeding like crazy, and there's nothing that's regulating their population. there's no natural predators. So we need hunters to go down there and start, you know, reducing some of their numbers and if possible, even taking them out of the ecosystem, because this is not their natural habitat and they're setting everything off balance. So I really believe that hunters are conservationists. People who are irresponsible, unethical, and do it illegally, they don't follow the rules and regulations set out by the state each season, and there's published, and it's you can get it for free. There's really no excuse for being ignorant of the law, especially if you're a responsible, ethical hunter. So people who are unethical, irresponsible, and they're doing it illegally, those are poachers. They're not hunters. They may think that they're hunting, but they're actually poaching. And what they're doing is illegal, and they're criminals. So we need hunters. We really do. They are a integral part of wildlife management and conservation efforts. What we don't want are poachers, people who are doing it illegally, irresponsibly, and unethically. You know, and they're not following the regulations and the rules. Those are the people that we don't want, you know, and we need to get rid of. But yeah, if you're against hunting, I understand. I was for a long time. I don't even like the idea of owning a gun. And which is why bow hunting really does call to me. Especially the bare bow, traditional bow hunting. Because I feel like if I use a compound bow or a cross, you know, what is that called? A crossbow? Or anything like that, using sights and things like that, you know, any kind of mechanical devices. I just feel like, you know, it's not, you know, they have the fair chase. And I know, you know, just because you're using firearms doesn't make it better or worse or anything like that. It's just what I feel comfortable with, right? And so even within hunting, you know, there are people who are like purists and like, oh, people shouldn't hunt this way or that way. No, I'm for everyone doing what they're comfortable with. It's about doing what you believe is right, even when no one's watching. Even when the wrong thing is legal, doing what you believe is right. So, you know, and that's called integrity. You have to do what you believe is right for you. And for me, I just feel like taking an animal with my bow, you know, with my bow and arrow, a stick and a string, you know, I am leveling the playing field as much as possible, and I'm not trying to put any of the advantage on my side. Of course, shooting an arrow, a flying projectile at an animal, you know, at a high speed like that, that puts me at a very high advantage. But, you know, not anybody can just fling an arrow accurately. It took a lot of time and effort to actually even get to the point of how accurate I am now. And I'm not even that accurate, you know? I still have to practice more and more. But I feel confident that within 15 to 20 yards, I can hit an animal in the kill zone. I'm pretty confident now that I can do that at 10 to 15 yards, you know? Maybe even 20 yards max, but I wouldn't take a shot at 20 yards. Not right now. I feel like 10 to 15 yards max is where I would take a shot. And it would have to be a clear shot where I know that there's not a tree or a branch in the way where it could possibly affect the arrow's flight and make me either miss or hit the animal and injure it, because then it's just going to run off and it's just going to suffer, and I don't want that. And that's the thing. No hunter wants that. That's not what hunters are. Hunters are not people who just want to hurt animals, and we enjoy hurting animals or we enjoy killing them. Again, if I'm going to eat meat, I don't want to support the mass-produced meat factories. You know, if I can, I want to eat locally, you know, and support local farms and ranchers. But to do that costs a lot of money, and I don't always have that in my budget to buy from the local butcher shop and pay that extra And I do value it. It's not that I don't see the value in it. It's just that it's not always in my budget to do that. So, you know, I don't always feel good about the meat that I eat. But I feel like if I take an animal, like if I shoot a turkey with my bow and arrow, and we're cooking that turkey for Thanksgiving dinner, I feel like I really would want to honor that life. You know, if I see someone scraping some extra turkey left over into the trash can, I may flip out, you know? I may scream at them and say, "Yo, the fuck are you doing with your life, motherfucker?" You know, like, I might lose it, you know, and choke them. I probably might run over there and choke them. Because, and shove the remaining turkey down their throat, you know? Because I would be like, do you know... I just killed that turkey. That turkey was living a few days ago. It was beautiful. I had to take that turkey's life for us to eat it, so we can live and enjoy this beautiful turkey dinner, you know, Thanksgiving. You know, like, don't waste it, you know? Like, I think I would take it much more seriously, you know? But yeah, you just buy like a $20-$30 turkey, butterball, frozen turkey, and, you know, you cook it with, you know, whatever, just scrape it off the plate, into the trash it goes, you know, and you don't really feel like, oh, I better do something productive with my time here now, I better make something of my life, you know, I better take responsibility and start doing the difficult things that I know I should do to make my time here meaningful and productive, you know, because I don't want to just waste my life and be careless with it, because that turkey, you know, I took its life so that I could live. You know, much different than gorging on some butterball turkey and now you're just like in a food coma. You know, you got that itis. Ate too much, you got that itis. Now you're just laying around, watch a movie, fall asleep, wake up, you know, and just whatever. Not that, you know, I'm judging, because I did that year after year, you know. That was the point of Thanksgiving, right? Eat too much and pass out, you know. But I just feel like I don't want to do that anymore. Now at 40 years old, I want to take a turn. I want to take a hard turn and start taking more responsibility for my life and trying to make the remainder of my time here meaningful, at least meaningful to me, and try to be productive with my time here and try to give back in a positive way. And if all I do with my time here on Earth is help with wildlife management and the population control and help, you know, help prevent overpopulation and know that I did my part in interacting with the ecosystem in a positive way, hey, I think I could die a happy man. You know, June the Conservationist, that's who I'd like to be from now on, June the Conservationist. And part of that involves hunting. I hope you understand. If that upsets you, I understand, and I'm sorry. I honor the light in you that's also in me. Namaste.